ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय तान् समेत्याः भगवान् अक्रूरं जगदीश्वर गृहीत्वा पाणिना पाणिं प्रश्रितं प्रहस्रम् इव तन्समेत्याः भगवान् अक्रूरं जगदीश्वर गृहीत्वा पाणिना पाणिं प्रश्रितं प्रश्रसन् इव तन्समेत्याः भगवान् अक्रूरं जगदीश्वर गृहीत्वा पाणिना पाणिं प्रश्रितं प्रहसन् इव तन्समेत्याः भगवान् अक्रूरं जगदीश्वर प्रश्रितं प्रहसन् इव तन्समेत्याः भगवान् अक्रूरं जगदीश्वर गृहीत्वा पाणिना पाणिं प्रहस्रितं प्रहसन् इव तन्समेत्याः भगवान् अक्रूरं जगदीश्वर गृहीत्वा पाणिना पाणिं प्रश्रितं प्रहसन् इव. Ladies, tam samichah bhagavan akuran jagadishwaram hitva panina panim prashritam prahasan iva. Ladies don't know they're ladies, maybe. Prabhupada always said ladies in this time, so that's why I always say. Right? You saw? He always said ladies, and they were very enthusiastic at that time. They all chanted. Prabhupada said, very good. I never heard him say very good when a man chanted. But something. Tan with them. Samecha, meeting. Aha said, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akuram to Akura. Jagadishwaraha, the Lord of the Universe. Grihitva, taking. Panina, with his hand. Panim, his hand. Prashritam, who is humble. Prahasan, smiling. Iva, indeed. Translation. After joining Nanda and the others, the Supreme Lord Krishna, the controller of the universe, took humble Akrura's hand in his own hand, smiling, spoke as follows. Very intimate. Next verse. Bhavan pravishtatam agre sahayana purim griham vayam tviha vamuchyata tato daksya mahe purim. Lord Krishna said, take the chariot and enter the city ahead of us. Then go home. After resting a while, we will go to see the city. So Krishna is taking charge. Because apparently, you know, Akura was completely in charge and forcing Krishna to come, but then when they actually get there, when they're actually getting to the outskirts of Mathura, then Krishna takes over, tells them what to do, even though he's only 12 years old. They look like 16. Take the chariot, enter the city ahead of us. We'll rest a while, then we'll go and see the city. Akura uvacha, naham babadbyam rahita pravekshe maturam prabho takvam narasi mam nata bhaktam te bhaktavat salaha. Akura said, Sri Akura said, O Master, without the two of you, I shall not enter Mathura. I am your devotee, O Lord, so it is not fair for you to abandon me, since you are always affectionate to your devotees. This is a very intimate association. Devotee, next verse. Agatscha yama gehanna sanatan kurvarhokshaja. Sahagraja Sagopalai Suridbis Cha Suritama. Come, let us go to my house with your elder brother, the coward men, and your companions, O best of friends, O transcendental Lord. In this way, please grace my house with its master. Punihi Pada Rajasa Grihano Grihamedinam Yach Cho Chain Anupyanti Pitara Sagnaya Suraha. I am simply an ordinary householder attached to ritualistic sacrifices. So please purify my home with the dust of your lotus feet. By that act of purification, my forefathers, the sacrificial fires, and the demigods will all become satisfied. A few more to go here. This is 14. Avanij yangri yugalam asit shlokyo balir mahan aishvaryam atulam lebe gatim chai kantinam tuyaha. By bathing your feet, the exalted Bali Maharaj attained not only glorious fame and unequaled power, but also the final destination of pure devotees. Apaste greet yavane janas trin lokan suchayo punan shira sadata ya sarvam Swaryataha Sagaratmajaha. The water of the river Ganges has purified the three worlds, having become transcendental by bathing your feet. Lord Shiva accepted that water on his head, and by that water's grace, the sons of King Sagara attained to heaven. Deva Deva Jagannatha Punya Shravana Kirtana Yaduttamottaha Shloka Narayana Namo Stute. O Lord of Lords, Master of the Universe, O you whose glories it is most pious to hear and chant, O best of the Yadus, O you whose fame is recounted in excellent poetry, O Supreme Lord Narayan, I offer you my obeisances. That's a nice one, huh? Sounds like many other verses. Deva Deva Jagannatha Punya Shravana Kirtana Yaduttamottama Shloka Narayana Namostute. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Ayasye Bhavato Geham Aham Arya Samanvita Yadu Chakra Duham Hatva Vita Ishe Surit Priyam. The Supreme Lord said, I will come to your house with my elder brother, but first I must satisfy my friends and well-wishers by killing the enemy of the Yadu clan. Now we have a little purport on this one. Very small. A purport. Akura glorified Krishna in text 16 as Yadutama, the best of the Yadus. Sri Krishna here confirms this by saying, in effect, since I am the best of the Yadus, I must kill the enemy of the Yadus, Kamsa. Then I will come to your house. In other words, don't tell me what to do. But that's the intimate association. Om Agana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksura Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desatarane Vanchakalpa Chuvyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gora Tushe Namaha Panchatatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Sarupakam Bhakta Vataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakti Shaktikam. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Garim Tat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shigurundina Tarane. Very interesting character is Akrura, because he's a great devotee, obviously, but he got entangled in later in this Shamantaka jewel thing and killing the king and all kinds of crazy things. But that's all explained. So we have to be careful judging devotees sometimes. For one reason or other, they may not be acting in a perfect way. It's said that the gopis cursed him when he took Krishna out of Vrindavan, and that's why he got in trouble later. Got bewildered. The gopis were so upset by him taking Krishna out, but he had to do it because that is Krishna's will, actually. Even Krishna here, he's saying, you know, I have this duty. I have to kill Kamsa before I can, you know, enjoy any house programs or anything. Pritanaya sadunam vinashaya traduskitam. He's coming to kill the demons and to liberate the pious. It's like when Madai was begging Lord Chaitanya to be merciful on him after Jagai was, you know, blessed by Lord Chaitanya, and he said no, and then he said, well, why? You know, you liberated all these demons in your past lives that were shooting with arrows and throwing, you know, Brahmastra weapons at you. Why not me? What's wrong with you? He said, your offense is much worse because you offended Nityananda. And I put much more value on Nityananda's body than my own body. So also showing example. So he's the best of the Yadus. Kamsa is a big enemy of the Yadus, mainly because Krishna is in the Yadu dynasty. But Kamsa was the enemy of so many people. So he became very, very powerful. It's another interesting thing that the nature of the demons. Although Kamsa had defeated Indra and, you know, made alliances with all the biggest demons in the universe, and, you know, had made himself the more or less emperor of the world, he was afraid of a little baby. He was afraid of, before the baby was born, he was afraid. You know, he didn't think, I can, you know, because the voice that came said, this will be your death. So he didn't know exactly how it was going to happen, but he was so fearful that from the time of that, he was never peaceful. Even when he killed, you know, one child after another, you know, he never knew, like Narada Muni went to Kamsa to speed up Krishna's pastime. So Kamsa was, Nanda made that agreement, I'll bring you all the sons, you know, one by one. And Kamsa, when he brought the first son, he said, no, the eighth son is going to kill me, so it's okay, give him back. But then Narada Muni came and said, look, Kamsa, you know, you don't know. If you count like this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, then this one is 8, but if you go this way, then it could be any one of them could be the eighth son, you don't know. So then he started killing all of them, one after another. And who can understand, you know, like sometimes we're suffering, things are not going right, you know, we're being mistreated by devotees, we think we are, or, you know, we're not getting justice. And but look at Devaki. I don't know what could be worse than having the babies killed right in front of her by her brother, you know, right? Why would Krishna do that? And then Vasudeva would always preach to her and, you know, to calm down and not get too excited, not get too upset, because they understood the karma. And then we learn later that those sons, you know, they were, by being killed in that way, they were being all liberated back to their heavenly position. But she didn't know that. And then later Krishna brought them all back, and she was so happy. And then again they went back to their heavenly planets. And she gave birth to Krishna, but she never got to even hold him as a baby practically. Just right away Krishna said, take me to Gokula. So maybe she held him, because first he appeared in Narayan, fully dressed in armor and jewels and everything. And she thought, Kamsa will definitely know that this is going to kill him, and she was afraid, so she disguised herself as an ordinary baby, not knowing that that's, the disguise is Narayan. the real origin of everything is Krishna. Whatever he's appearing as a baby, or that this two-armed Krishna is the Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So we heard yesterday a lot, and then so now, you know, after Akura saw all these visions in the water and got more bewildered, and he already knew, you know, when he was on the way to Vrindavan, he was just in ecstasy, thinking how he was going to greet Krishna and Balaram and offer so many prayers. And as soon as he saw the footprint of Krishna, the footprint of Krishna is quite easy to recognize. You don't need a, you know, a magnifying camera and the Interpol computers or something. Somehow or other, and it's described in the Bhagavatam that they were always there because no one in Braj would step on Krishna's footprint. So he would make a footprint in the dirt or the sand, and everybody would avoid it. So the footprints were everywhere. Now there's a few around Govardhan Hill, and getting harder and harder to find. You know, we have that one stone that they have at Radhadamodar that's got Krishna's footprint. But at that time they were everywhere. And even the animals, even the deer and all whatever animals, they would avoid. They wouldn't step on Krishna's footprint. So Kamsa just immediately fell on the ground and started offering such wonderful prayers to Krishna. So he's, or not Kamsa, Akura, And Akura is noted in it, you know, as a Shravana Kirtanam Smarana Vandanam. Vandanam is prayer. Akura is the personality that is noted for offering prayers. His prayers are so wonderful. But still, later on, he somehow or other got entangled in this intrigue against Krishna and stealing the Shyamantaka jewel and killing that Satyajit. And so, you know, many these things are there. Prabhupada stresses apparent contradiction sometimes. It's just our mind. We don't understand things. There's always explanations for everything. That's why we tell people, keep reading. If you don't understand something in the Bhagavatam, keep reading. It'll come clear very soon, within 10 minutes or something. If you stop and try to figure it out, you know, it just seems it's too confusing. So many things are there. Because it, you know, the relationships of Krishna and the devotees, they're not some dried up thing. This is not Vaikuntha, where everybody's just on reverence and offering that kind of prayers. These are intimate relationships. So here Akura is, you know, he's treating it, he's saying, you're the Supreme Lord and I'm just a fallen Grihamedi. He's not a Grihamedi, I don't think, but he's saying he is. Grihamedi means death, and that the householder is living in the house just to die. You know, and Grihasta is another thing. Being a householder is not itself bad, but being Grihamedi, that means they're living in the house just for sense gratification, which most people are doing, especially nowadays. They're just, you know, how many advertisements we see in Bombay, Pune, and many other places for new houses, right? And we see the rich men trying to build the biggest house. Somebody just told me that another rich man was going to build a bigger house than this other biggest house, and the owner of the biggest house somehow stopped it. You know, he's afraid of competition. Like King Indra. King Indra, you know, he's afraid. If he ever sees a sannyasi, you know, doing a lot of tapasya, or he sees a king doing a lot of yajna, then he tries to stop it for fear that someone will take his position. That's the, you know, the materialist, even though he's a devotee, he's attached to his position, his prestige, his sense gratification. He's still not exactly a Grihamedi, but the real Grihamedi, they're in their house just to get a bigger and bigger television and get better furniture and, you know, all these things. And even the Srinathji told me now when they hire servants in the house, the servants interview the householder. How big is your television? Do you have the cable or whatever it is now? Do you have this? Do you have that? You know, then we'll consider working for you. Because people have so many things. But sense gratification, you know, they think is the goal of life and to gratify their senses. In the universities in America, when they're recruiting people, they show them all this sense gratification their campus offers, you know. We have beautiful pool hall and we have this and we have all these things, and that attracts people more than the quality of the education. So many houses, you know, the highest building in Bombay, the most prestigious, the most luxurious, even in Vrindavan, everywhere along the road, you know, one of the signboards in Vrindavan, I don't know if it's still there, showed a very luxurious house called the Grand Palace or something, with a beautiful woman in a Western evening gown standing on the step, and it said, buy this house now because you only live once. You only live once, so you have to enjoy, you know, hurry up. Enjoy your senses. You only live once. That's Charvak Muni. There's no next life, don't worry. Just enjoy as much as possible. I mean, all this talk about karma and next life, it's not true. Just get ghee, you know, get everything, get pleasure, get, you know, enjoy your senses. So that, I heard in the Indian schools they teach the Charvak, you know, instead of Chanak. Prabhupada learned Chanak. Chanak is, you know, all from scripture, and it's very good. So So we're this Krishna entering Mathura is a beginning of a whole new everything, you know, for the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's been in Braj and, you know, with the cows and the gopis and the cowherd boys and, you know, doing his childish activities, first young child, you know, stealing butter and, you know, just making, attracting attention to himself by making trouble in different ways for the older gopis, which was their greatest pleasure to become, because if Krishna was absorbing them and thinking of him, and, you know, everybody was getting a meeting with Krishna. The boys were with Krishna all day, the gopis would go at night, but then he's left Vrindavan, and, you know, he promised him, "I'll be back in a few days." But we know he did come back, you know, different times and left again, but they couldn't really, even when he was in Dwarka, he was thinking, you know, if I go back and meet them, and people would tell him they're all dying, they can't live. And he said, but if I go, I'll have to leave again, and then it'll get worse. So, but that's actually their greatest pleasure. So this is a, you know, this entering into Mathura, then so many things happen after, first in Mathura, then so many demons are attacking Mathura all the time that he moves to Dwarka, exhibiting his incredible mystic power. He just created Dwarka like immediately, and everybody went to sleep in Mathura and woke up in Dwarka. Not too many contractors can do that, right? You know, we could use that power to get our temple of Vedic planetarium built, but you know, it's not easy to get these things done. But Krishna could do that and move everybody. They didn't have any idea what was happening. They just woke up in a protected environment, in an island fortress, because he didn't want to be bothered. He didn't mind fighting the demons. He defeated them over and over again, but he didn't like that the citizens of Dwarka were being Mathura were being harassed so much. So Mathura has a very, very rich ancient history, but there's never been archaeological dig there, but it's protecting. So we are, you know, you're entering into this new life where Krishna is still sporting. We know when he enters Mathura, he comes with his friends and they just sport around, you know, with different people. And all these different things come up. Kubja, you know, the hunchback woman. Krishna jokes with her and says, "Oh, beautiful girl, what are you doing?" And first she thought, you know, it's just another person insulting her. Nobody ever thinks a hunchback woman is beautiful. But then Krishna called her over and, you know, said, "Give me that sandalwood." And she was caring for Kamsa. And she was, of course, afraid, you know, supposed to give it to Kamsa. But she just looked at Krishna and Balaram and they were so beautiful she couldn't resist. So Krishna just took her, you know, stepped on her feet and many of us could use such a chiropractor, but so he did many, you know, grown-up kind of things. Even though then he was just 12 years old, but he appeared like 16. And, you know, many, many amazing things happened there in Mathura. I don't know. I should jump ahead too much, but you know, it's mostly Leela right here. It's not so much explanation of anything, even by Prabhupada, I think. No, this part, these purports were not given by Prabhupada, but when there's no purport, that means the previous acharyas didn't make purport very much. They just carry on, you know, with the Leela, and then every once in a while you get big, big purports. So we're kind of finished with the career after this until much later in Dwarka. We went to Shamatuka Jewel and King Sachajit and then different wives of Krishna coming. And so, first he's in Vrindavan and it's all Parakiya Rasa, sneaking off at night with the young girls. But then later he becomes a perfect householder in Dwarka, where he starts, marrying Rukmini, and then this one, that one, and finally 16,108 wives. So the materialists will think, well, I remember my father was not at all spiritually inclined. But he looked at the Krishna book. Probably he only looked at the picture of it said Krishna had 16,108 wives. I don't think he read it. But he came, "You crazy, you fool, how can this be? You're being cheated. And nobody can, I can't do that. Nobody can have 16,000 wives." That's how they think. "I can't do it. I'm a person, so no person can do the things that we read about Krishna doing. Killing this big elephant, manifesting so many things." Another time in Nigeria, we were in a university classroom, and I don't know why, it just came out, I said Krishna had 16,108 wives. I have no idea why that came out. So there was a big protest there, mostly Christian, but his protest was, "God can't get married." He didn't even think about the numbers. He just said, "God," and they were arguing like anything, "God can't get married." I said, "Why not? You get married, why can't God? If you're better than God, you can do something." They did, no, "God can't get married." And what is he? It's like that guy I met on the plane that kept saying, "God, he can't do this, he's not that, I don't believe he's this, I don't think he's a person." I said, "Why are you calling him he then?" He means a person. They're mixed up. Kamsa is so much afraid of Krishna that, he tried so many ways to kill Krishna, in Vrindavan. So many demons attacking from the very beginning. Putana and Trinavarta, big ones. Agasura, one of the biggest demons. Bakasura. They're like family members, a lot of them. And they just kept coming. Keshi, Aristasura. Every one of them thought that previous demon was a jerk. He didn't know how. "I'm going to kill him. Don't worry, Kamsa. I'm going to take care of it." And Kamsa was so afraid. He wouldn't go himself to fight because he was afraid of this little baby. At first it was a baby, Then it just a little child, a cowherd boy. Cowherd men are good fighters, but, the six-year-old, seven-year-old ones, I don't know. Why Kamsa should be afraid. And then he would hear the news, one after another from his spies that Bakasura was killed by Krishna. Then he'd panic even more. But another one would come and say, "Don't worry. I'm much better. I'll take care." Because they're all thinking, "I'm going to get special favor of Kamsa." They were too stupid to think they should try to get favor of Krishna. That would be much better. So then when Indra started attacking Govardhan Hill, the spies also came and told Kamsa, and Kamsa thought, "Good, Indra is doing it for us now. We don't have to worry about killing Krishna and Kamsa. Indra is taking care of everything." But then he got word that Krishna lifted up Govardhan Hill and everybody was under the hill and nothing's happening. And I just read something when they came out from under Govardhan Hill, even though it had been raining on top of Govardhan Hill so much, all around, huge rain, like inconceivable rain we'd never seen. But everything was fresh and nice when they all came out from under Govardhan Hill. They said the Sudarshan Chakra, he was going around and around and evaporating all the rain. So it never hit the ground. So it's another devotee of Krishna, but he's the original darshan. He's got so much power, heat, So he was just evaporating all the rain, and then Indra finally realized, you know, he's making a big mistake. And Govardhan, because Krishna was touching him, even though these huge chunks of ice were hitting him, and, you know, he felt it all like flowers because he was in so much ecstasy. And he wasn't heavy because Krishna was holding him up. He was very light. So it's another impossible thing, but devotees all believe, you know, very much. So when Kamsa heard that, you know, they all came out from under the hill and Krishna's all right, even Indra couldn't kill him. He just, you know, every day he got so bad that he couldn't even see himself in the mirror, right? Couldn't see his shadow. You know, these are symptoms of someone whose death is coming very close, you know. And Kamsa was educated enough, he knew, and he'd look in the mirror and there's nothing there. Any of it happened to anybody? Sometimes we don't want to see what's there, but, you know, it's unfortunate. But we always see something. We don't really see exactly what we look like either, but, you know, what other people see, because in the mirror everything's backwards. But so we don't see exactly what other people see, but we get some idea, and it's a limited amount of reflection. But he couldn't see his shadow, he couldn't sleep, he was having dreams of donkeys, you know, hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw all the time, and passing him on the road. And there's all these inauspicious signs. Those were noticed also by Dhritarashtra just before the battle was going to start. Every inauspicious sign there was manifesting itself. So he knew very well there was no chance of victory for his sons, but still he was hopeful, and he wanted to hear about the battle, and he had to hear every detail, and, you know, how all his sons were being killed one by one by Bhima. But he knew all along, you know, you can't defeat Krishna. He had pretty much knew who Krishna was, but, you know, because of his attachment to his son. So that's what we talk about when we talk about family attachment. That we should be attached. If you have a family, you have to take care of the family. If you have a job, you have to do the job. But I heard one Christian preacher once, it really got right through to my heart, because we used to preach like that, and we kind of tried to compromise, and it never works. But he was saying, you love your children. He said, that's very good. You should love your children. Very good. But if you love your children more than you love Jesus, you're not a Christian. And all the people just... So, you know, if we have children, we have money, we have a good job, we have a good inheritance, or we have beauty, or, you know, whatever opulence we might have or don't have, it was all given to us by Krishna. So we should be more attached to Krishna than the things we have, whatever they are. But then it's our duty to Krishna to take care of those things, take care of this body. It's a huge burden, you know. Sometimes we think, you know, I remember when I was first a devotee, we had that. Well, we're not the body. So we didn't think, and taking care of the body is Maya. That's Maya. You're not that body. So, you know, we got a lot of reactions nowadays. But, you know, we didn't understand so much. But gradually we understand, you know, we're in the body. Krishna gave us this body. Krishna put us in it. For whatever reason, ultimately it's to preach. There's no other reason that we need a material body. It's not for sense gratification. And we're born in particular gotras or particular tribes or particular countries, you know, so we can preach. We utilize that, you know, birth for whatever way. Somebody's born in a particular country, then they know the language, they know the people, and they're meant to preach there. Prabhupada used the Americans because foolish people were admiring them, so he took Americans to other countries. People would listen to them. Also, Americans had that pushy nature to force people to do what they're doing. So the devotees did that. They made a lot of devotees. Unfortunately, most of the Americans are pushing all bad things, all sense gratification. But now it's for everybody. It's everybody's duty to go everywhere, wherever they can, every town and village, and you know, spread this mercy, distribute the books, and distribute the holy name, especially in prasadam, you know, to as many people as possible. Everyone is suffering. It's getting harder to reach people, you know, when they live on the 75th floor of an apartment with four or five gates before you can get in, right? You can't just go knock on the doors like, you know, you can in poor neighborhoods. So that, you know, the Bhagavatam explains in the Nalakuvar and Manigriva that poor people have some advantage, you know, because they let sadhus come in. And they don't have gates on their communities. They don't have. I've seen in some houses in Asia, you know, they have a huge iron gate with two or three padlocks sometimes, and then two more doors, all with, you know, and you turn the key like six times, and six bolts come out like this long into the wall. It's all steel, you know. And still they're afraid, you know. And they're on the 15th floor, but they have big bars on the window, you know, because Spider-Man might come or something. You know, who's going to climb up there, you know, right? Spider-Man could, or, you know, one of those demons in the comic books, but, you know, there's not really those people, but I don't know what they're, but they're so afraid. And then they turn on the television and they see all the hellish news and all the things that are happening, and they can't be peaceful even in the midst of all that. But devotees are peaceful. They're happy. And when you have nothing, you have nothing to lose, and you don't attract so many thieves if you don't have a lot of valuable things. So we are... And we want to, this study of these relationships, like here we hear a little bit of these conversations with the Krura, and previously when he came to, you know, all the arguments about Krishna not going to Mathura, that first Nanda and Yasoda were totally against it. And Balaram said he should go, and then the gopis trying everything. You know, Krura had to keep driving up in the jungle and back and forth and everything, the gopis all lying down on the road. And Krishna ran off at one point into the forest with the gopis. And then finally Akura, you know, convinced him to come back, you know, because he felt so bad leaving them. But then leaving them is a special mercy, because that would increase their intensity of their feelings of separation, which is a very hard thing to understand. You know, that Lord Chaitanya is giving us, and Lord Ramachandra did it with Sita, Krishna did it with the gopis and with all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya left Navadvip, he left his mother and his beautiful young wife, completely attached, dependent completely on him. Then he sometimes left Puri and left everybody. They tried every trick in the book, we heard the other day. You know, don't go to Vrindavan just now. There's, you know, it's not a good season. Wait a couple weeks or months. There'll be this festival and the weather is better. And Nityananda and Sarvabhauma, I think, they kept convincing him for a couple years. Just stay a little bit longer, you know. It's not a good time. Finally he said, just leave it, I'm leaving. And, you know, when he left, everybody fell down unconscious. Everybody was weeping. He never looked back. He didn't, you know, feel apparently any... Because he knew that they're going to think him more and more. And so, you know, special mercy. This is a feeling that the six Goswamis are promoting, as feelings of separation. So here is the beginning of that. Krishna's left Vrindavan, but he wants to spend some time with his friends first, because he knows they're all going to have to go back to Vrindavan and he's not going back with them. At that time, they all think he's going. They got there first, you know. They were camped out already outside of Mathura because they stopped at the... got there, and, you know, for bathing and everything, so the other cowherd men were ahead. So Krishna felt obliged to go visit them and then take care of Kamsa. Pratanaya sadunam. Someone might think, well, why does God kill people? But when he kills someone, they get liberated. And it also, you know, these demons are creating just trouble for everybody. Kamsa had stopped yajnas. Nobody could start a sacrificial fire. The Brahmins couldn't chant their mantras. You know, he was very powerful. So everybody was completely miserable. There were no, you know, proper things going on. So Krishna had, it's great pleasure for the devotees when the big demon is killed. As soon as Kamsa was killed, all the fires lit up automatically. Everything started. Everybody's chanting their mantras, and everybody became happy immediately. They forget all the distress that Kamsa had been causing. That's the power of Krishna. So as soon as we really connect with Krishna, then we'll also forget all the distress that we've ever, you know, all is heard and is to be heard. All the suffering that this body is providing now, or all the problems we have to face trying to maintain the society or trying to carry on, it's nothing. When we really connect with Krishna, then you know for sure that it's all Krishna's mercy. Whatever is happening, whether we think it's good or bad, devotees understand this is all Krishna's mercy, or the mercy is coming. The symptom of surrender is devotee always expects the mercy of the Lord. You know, he's not crying. A devotee is crying, why me, why me? Why am I getting so much mercy? I don't deserve it. You know, where the karmis are crying, oh, you know, I'm a good person. There's one little book that my god sister, Devi Shakti, the genius preacher in Vrindavan, she has that little shop. So she made a bunch of books, Who Am I? Why Am I? I and Mine. And they're very small, little 15 pages like this big. And so the latest one is called, I'm a Good Person, Why Am I Suffering? You know, everybody's thinking like that. There was even a book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? And I heard Brahmatirtha Prabhu, they were interviewing him about that. He said, well, we think, why do good things happen to bad people? It doesn't make sense. You know, and that's what, like India, Prabhupada said, they're bewildered. This was some, of course, when Prabhupada said it's a long time ago, but, you know, they're always thinking we shouldn't kill cows. But then they see America, they see the Time magazine, they see the movies, they see the television, and everything looks like everybody's so happy and healthy and everything is so opulent, and they kill so many cows, so maybe it's not really bad. And now India's defeated America. They've become the world's champion. It's not every Indian. India has the other side of people with goshalas with 100,000 cows and taking care. Then we have both sides. So we want to wake people up, you know. Jeev Jago, Gora Chanda Bole, Lord Chaitanya's calling. Kota Nidra Jao Maya, Pisha Chiraka. When, how long are you going to sleep in the lap of the witch Maya and just try to enjoy and thinking, I don't need God. I've got money. I've got a 75-story penthouse. Right? So many palaces are going up. I just went to Worli. There's one. It's like, it looks like just a big factory or something. It's a round black thing, and it's called a Grand Palace in French language. And it's really high, but it's still going, you know. And then the devotee told me this, the apartments are getting smaller, you know, costing more. And then they have to spend so much money to go to Goa or something every weekend or something to get away from the cramped up little apartment and living in air conditioning all the time and, you know, afraid to breathe. And so we're trying to wake people up. And we start out by spreading the holy name, spreading the Maha Mantra, opening the temple up. We saw yesterday so many big group of some kind of tourists are there looking around. So they must get some benefit. You know, they take pictures. And people are coming all the time. And Juhu is more of a tourist place. They have 10,000 guests a day there. 50,000 on Saturday, 100,000 on Sunday. You know, people come. And they can't help but hear the kirtan. It's because it's always there. And they go out, they go through all the prasadam, and everybody wants to eat. So they eat. This way, you know, and when people come here, they get really trained up to surrender everything to Krishna. But surrendering everything to Krishna, we can keep what you have, but understand it belongs to Krishna. That's the trick. Nirmama nirahankar. Nothing is mine. It doesn't mean you're just laying on the street with on a newspaper for your bed and, you know, just taking whatever few coins people give you. I don't have anything. It means you don't. I'm not the proprietor. Krishna owns everything. Someone may be, you know, a zillionaire. They may be the richest man in the world. But if they understand that Krishna gave me all this, I have to use it in His service, then they're great devotees. Like Yudhisthira, he was emperor of the world. His opulence was such that the demigods were bewildered. How anyone can be so opulent? But he slept on the ground in the cow barn and didn't care about anything. But still, he was a king, and he was collecting all the taxes and conquering all over the place, and, you know, feeding 60,000 Brahmins every day. Because you have to be careful. Bhishma told him, you have to be very careful. There's some Brahmins who are reclusive, and they never come to the city. So you have to have spies to go find them and make sure you feed them also. You know, you have to, not just the ones that come begging. You've got to go look for all the rest of them to be a really good king. And he was doing that. That's his meditation. You know, how to serve the devotee, how to serve all the citizens. But that's a devotee. Think of others first. Compassion. Kabhi jiva doya. Right? Bhakti Vinoda said, Kaviji Morakori Doya, Dia Morja Sukaduki, whatever. When will I give up, you know, trying to make myself happy and I'll have compassion for all living entities? When will that day be mine? When my heart will shine like this? Then I can preach, Bhakti Vinoda is saying. Then I can preach. Then I can go out and actually preach the Metta of the Lord, when I don't care anything for my own comfort. That's after Lord Shiva drank the ocean poison. Great souls almost always voluntarily accept suffering for the sake of the suffering of other conditioned souls, and this is considered the, you know, very high way to worship the Lord. So devotees, you know, going out to preach, it's not easy sometimes. Devotees in the North and America and Russia, they're distributing books when it's 20, 30 below zero in December. I don't know how, you know, and they do really a lot of books. It's not easy, you know. That I know some devotees, they were distributing and the people would try to give a donation and their hands would freeze. It was so cold. And they couldn't catch the money, you know. They just, you probably never had that experience. I've had it, you know. When it's 30, 40, 50 below zero, you can't feel anything. You can't really move your fingers properly and nothing works, you know. And they take off the glove for a few minutes and, you know, even with the glove, it's pretty bad. And devotees were taking bath by rubbing snow on their body, and that was cooking by, you know, melting the snow because no water would flow. And but they were in ecstasy, chanting the holy name. Sometimes it's so hot, like in Bombay, it's so hot, so polluted. The devotees are in ecstasy, distributing books. And they get all the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So we can take the blessings of Akura. We study his prayers because they're the ideal prayers according to, you know, our information. Glorifying Krishna. He was just dreaming about how I'm going to greet Krishna and Balaram and, you know, bow down to them. And he knew who they were. So So now we have Gaur Nittai, that's also Krishna and Balaram. And we greet them by chanting and dancing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then they give us all their mercy. They love to see that dancing. That's why I like Mangal Arati here more than almost any temple I've ever been. Everybody's dancing and jumping, you know. Many temples and everybody there. In America, the devotees will go to the club and do aerobic dancing or something and really work out if they come to Mangal Arati. Prabhupada encouraged the dancing. And he always had kirtan after Bhagavatam class, that at least what I saw. And he would start out, someone else was chanting, and then when he started playing the gong after it got going, and all the children would be in front of Prabhupada. At that time, the oldest child may be 12 years old. Most of them were 3, 4, 5 years old, even babies. And they would, and Prabhupada would take that gong stick and, you know, come on, come on, get them jumping like crazy, and he'd be so happy. All the devotees would go wild, jumping and jumping. This is what Lord Chaitanya did. That's what, you know, how we want to stay connected is by dancing, and also in public dancing, so people can see this, because everybody likes to dance, but they're doing what Prabhupada called dog dancing at the discotheque. Even when I was in high school, there was a popular dance called the dog. I mean, even I was a gross teenager, but when I saw the girls doing that dance, I said, it was too much. But they were into it. They had the dog and all different animals, you know. That's what they're dreaming that they can become. One guy told me once, you know, I said, you could become a dog. And he said, what's wrong with that? I would like to be a dog. I said, okay, just get down on all fours. We'll put a rope around your neck. And then he said, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, I don't know about that. Prabhupada told one boy that said, he said, okay, I give my blessings. You can be a dog. That's what they want. They think it's better. Dogs get treated really nice now, you know. Not the Indian village dogs, but, you know, the rich people's dogs. They have hotels for dogs. They get their own room and their own yard to play in and their own cook and their own, you know, bathing guy, and they get everything, and people are paying at $300 a night for the dog hotel. And some people build a dog house, which is bigger than many people's house. Even at the Echo Village there, the dogs have it really nice. They got a really big house, and they're very happy dogs, you know. But they're doing service for Krishna. They're not sleeping in the room with, you know, with the people. But they want to be dogs because one hippie poet sang, dogs run free, why not me? Dogs are running everywhere in the street. They can chase women. Nobody cares. You know, they don't get arrested for crossing the red light or anything. But why can't I do that? If you become a dog, you can. So. But then you have to have the other miseries of a dog, of all those little guys biting on you all the time. And so any question? Hare Krishna. This is Friday morning, right? Somebody has a question? Yeah. Govardhan was just in ecstasy. Govardhan became in ecstasy because of touching Krishna. Wasn't heavy. Yeah. Does everybody know who this is? Apurva Prabhu? The foremost cook of ISKCON. Huh? Yeah, big book distributor. His wife is here. She's also still distributing books after so many years, inspiring everybody. So we're very fortunate to have their company here. He got hit by a car there in Mayapur, so his body's in pretty bad shape now. Another question? Don't inspire many questions. Huh? She does, but can she talk? Oh, yeah? She lost her voice. These bodies, they're really what they are. You know? I hope it comes back. Indra Dinamarj lost his voice for 1 year one time. He said, Maharaj, I can only whisper a little bit. I can't. So many months of Ayurvedic and different things. And then he learned how to exercise it properly so you can sing all the time and not blow it out. But if you lose your voice from chanting all the time, that's special mercy. Body is just one inconvenience after another, and Krishna is kindly showing us, more and more day by day. Okay, so Krishna Balaram Kija, Akrura Kija, Radha Gopinath Bhaktivrinda Kija, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.